This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Michael Thompson from the Portman Group. How are you, Michael?
I'm really good. How are you?
Excellent. I'm pretty good indeed. We're going to be talking a wee bit about the Portman Group and some of the issues that you guys see. But first of all, what is Portman Group? And then we'll find out how long you've been with them.
Yeah, the Portman Group is the dedicated social responsibility body for UK drinks producers. We regulate the drinks producer industry, ensuring that their marketing is socially responsible. At the same time, we will work with our member companies, who are nine of the largest drinks companies, on their social responsibility campaigning and their initiatives, trying to show leadership to the rest of the industry. And we also speak on behalf of our member companies on issues such as harmful drinking, excessive drinking, and alcohol and social responsibility.
All right, that sounds fairly wide-ranging. That'd be interesting to get into. How long have you been with them, Michael, and what's your role within the Portman Group?
Yeah, I've been here since the start of 2007, so I'm into my third year at the Portman Group, and my job title is Head of Communications and External Affairs, which kind of covers everything from government relations through to public affairs work, media work, working with colleagues in the industry. It's kind of stakeholder relations, really. It's interesting. Yeah, I've enjoyed my time here so far.
Are you from the drinks industry or from PR?
No, I don't. That's right. I don't have any drinks industry previous experience. I used to run the press office at the Law Society. I used to work with solicitors. Yeah. And before that, I was at London. And before that, I was at London Luton Airport, as they like to call it. They like to put the London bit on the front of it as a communications advisor to them. And before that, I worked for the Met Police at Scotland Yard. So I've got a kind of very much a PR media relations background.
All right. Well, let's talk a wee bit more about the Portman Group themselves, because they're. I think of them more almost like lobbyists than perhaps regulators. I know the industry is supposedly self-regulated, or it's supposed to be self-regulated in some respect. Do you see yourselves as regulators?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that we are clearly, as I've just explained, we will be here and we will be representing the views of our member companies, nine of the largest drinks producers. But at the same time, we have it within our remit to challenge and to encourage the industry to continually raise their standards. So I think that your strength when it comes to lobbying comes from your track record of doing good for the wider community. It comes from actually doing things and showing achievements and leading on responsible initiatives. So that's where I think that the Portman Group gets its, very good reputation from. I think if you speak to some of the health lobby, they will question whether the industry is able to self-regulate. I would say that actually we've got an extremely good track record when it comes to self-regulation. We've got a wonderful track record as well when it comes to setting standards for the industry, when it comes to bold initiatives, such as the establishment of the DrinkAware Trust, yeah. The promotion of DrinkAware, the DrinkAware website, which we set up, and it's now the main source of consumer information on responsible drinking in the UK. That wasn't set up by the government. That was set up by the industry and promoted heavily by the industry, and it's making a big difference to consumer behaviour.
It's quite a powerful site. I had a look at it. You've got a very strong Google ranking, which means a lot of people link to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's on 3 billion drinks containers in the UK every year. It's on all of our member companies, their advertising. They'll put drinkaware.co.uk on there. So it's getting lots of publicity, and that's filtering through to consumer behaviour, and they're going onto the site to check their drinking habits and to get health information and advice.
Who funds the Portman Group? Because you said it was the nine biggest drinks companies, but can you name them?
Yeah, sure. Put me on the spot. Here we go. We got Diageo, Scottish in Newcastle, Pernod, Coors, Carlsberg, Beverage Brands, Bacardi Martini, Brown-Forman, and InBev. They're the nine companies.
What about Constellation?
Constellation aren't within the Portman Group's membership. No, we do have, we're broad church, so we do have wine producers, you know, Pernod and Diageo, and obviously the big brewers and spirits producers. So we are across the industry, but no, we don't have Constellation within
our membership. Why is that? Because they're the biggest wine producer in the world.
I mean, you know, we'd be delighted to have Constellation within our membership, but you know, it's fair to say that you would need to approach Constellation to ask them why they've not taken the decision to join us. We'd be you know, we'd be delighted to have them though.
Okay, all right. Maybe it's because you're more alcohol related as opposed to wine specific, and they're mainly a wine company.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they will certainly be within the membership of you know, sort of sector specific trade associations such as the Wine and Spirit Trade Association. I mean, we are, as you say, solely here, and we're solely concerned with alcohol and social responsibility, as well, you know, as well as regulating the industry. And you know, it may be that they feel that their interests are being represented through the WSDA, effectively.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So your position, from what you're saying, is social responsibility. And is that really all you're about, social responsibility?
Yeah, I mean, we are here to regulate the industry. When we say we regulate, we will, with our member companies, set the rules for drinks producer marketing. That's all marketing that's outside
There's
advertising.
No, you haven't had anything from the government saying that you're a regulator. It's no, more of a
no. It's
internal...
really just came from that's right. Just came from the industry. So it's the industry saying, okay, we need to establish rules which the whole of the industry will have to abide by. It all followed really the controversy back in the mid 1990s, following the introduction of Alcopops, ready-to-drink products, as the industry likes to call them, into the market. Ready-to-drink products.
I'm told
not to refer to them as Alcopops. There was a lot of consumer concern and public concern about the marketing of Alcopops, allegedly aimed towards children. That's when our code was introduced as a result of that, because of the public and media outcry. You know, one of the rules in the code is that you shouldn't have particular appeal to under 18s through your marketing. So we will set the rules in consultation with the public health community, with government. It's an open consultation every time. We will establish a code rule, but it's an independent complaints process. So the complaints are not coming to the Portman Group or our member companies. They will be made to Sir Richard Tilt, who used to be Director General of the Prison Service, and his totally independent panel, none of whom work within the alcohol industry.
Well, they're like a judiciary.
That's it.
You set the laws or the rules, and they just ensure the implementation, or at least any complaints about them.
That's it. So they will judge complaints. They're the jury, really, for alcohol marketing. And, you know, that's how I think that certainly the code that we've got has got such widespread public support and support from the alcohol health lobby and the charities, because, you know, they can make complaints. They can make complaints about Portman Group member companies as well, but the complaints go to the independent complaints panel, and they've made decisions which the industry don't like. But that, unfortunately, is the nature of the way that the regulatory system works. The industry decides, for example, last year we brought in a new code rule that said you shouldn't be encouraging rapid drinking or down-in-one drinking in your marketing. You know, we were certainly praised by the government for doing that. But you know, the interpretation of that rule is very much down to the independent complaints panel. And it may be that, you know, there are people sitting around the table that have made and taken that final decision to introduce that rule, and their own products could be at some stage affected by that, the introduction of that rule.
Things like that rapid drinking is quite interesting, because one of the guys who runs wine tastings for me used to run or be a manager for a group of pub chain. I won't tell you what it is, but he ran the pubs. He ran like 10, 15 pubs as an area manager for it. And the sort of things they were doing was like changing the tempo of the music and all sorts of things, and without explicitly doing it, he knew he could change his sales figures quite noticeably by doing these small changes. Is things like music governed by that, or?
Yeah, I mean, we will. If someone was to make a complaint about that, I mean, obviously, you know, the panel would want to see evidence of you know, malpractice and intent there. But we don't cover retailers' activities. They are regulated by the Licensing Act. So
do you have Tesco's? Tesco's and a few other people have signed up to your...
Yeah, I mean, they will be code signatories, so they will support our code. And the way it works is that the panel will make a decision. A product will be removed from sale by the retailer, so the retailers support the panel's decision. That's how self-regulation works. That's why it's effective. It's a very tough sanction for a producer. But the retailers themselves and their activities are not covered by the code. They simply support the decisions that are made by the panel against the code rules, and the code rules apply to producers.
Okay, so it's all about production-led rather than retail-led.
Yeah, so when we're talking about a new code rule that prevents producers from encouraging down-in-one consumption or rapid drinking, it would be, for example,
selling
the design. Yeah,
size.
It could be the design of the packaging. Yeah, it could be any kind of instructions on the label saying, for example, if it was to say down this in one, or tilt your head back and down this in one go. All of that kind of thing is potentially problematic under the code, but it's not retailers that are covered.
One of the things I noticed doing a wee bit of research was you felt that it was best for the industry to be the regulator for subjective matters such as advertising. But when I read that, I thought, oh, gosh, you've still got the film censors. They're quite good at government-controlled censorship and managing regulation, so to speak, for quite subjective topics.
Yeah, I mean, we will say that, if you tend to look at legislation, you'll find that usually, by its very nature, you have to be very prescriptive. It has to be black and white. What we can do through our code is that, companies can make their case to the panel. The panel can consider lots and lots of different views and reach their decisions. If something is left to legislation, it will have to be tightly defined. And actually, it's extremely difficult to define what is and what is not. In some cases, responsible marketing, what's acceptable and what's going too far.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, I think if you look at certainly some of the decisions that our panel have made, they've been very good discussions that they've had, and they've been very difficult decisions to make. I'm not saying every single complaint decision is going to be difficult. Some are clearly, some marketing is clearly going to be irresponsible. In other cases, no, it is very much a case of considering all of the arguments put forward by the companies in how the code rules should be applied. And I think the same does apply to alcohol advertising.
What are your goals for this year? At the end of the year, you look back at the year, 2009, say, look, we did this, this, and this, tick the box, good year. What would be a good year for you guys?
I mean, we are here to, obviously, to regulate the industry, but we're here also to protect the industry's long-term commercial freedoms. So if at the end of this year the government had decided that, as well as introduce a new mandatory code for retailers, they were going to introduce the mandatory code and extend it to producer activity, that would be bad news. I mean, that would be dreadful news for the industry, because effectively what you're doing is you are conceding control of your rules and your marketing to the government. Mm-hmm. You're putting the Department of Health potentially in control of what you can and can't put on the side of your bottles. Now, that is a huge risk. And I think that's the main reason why our member companies are funding our work.
Are you worried that they'll end up with similar sort of, you see on smoking packets, where two-thirds of the label is taken up with, you're going to die?
I mean, it's certainly no secret that some of the health lobby would like to see diseased livers at bars on the sides of bottles. Now, if we were sitting here 10 years ago, you may well laugh at that, but if I'd made the comparison to tobacco marketing as well and advertising, you may also have sniggered at that. But actually, if you look at the tobacco industry, it's gone down that route, and the risk is still out there. It's still very much a possibility that the alcohol industry could be treated the same way. So the industry needs to make sure, first of all, that its house is in order, that it's properly regulated. But not only that, that actually it's on the front foot. It's working very closely with government on trying to educate consumers, trying to change the culture so that the industry is seen in a positive light rather than being seen, as I think, unfortunately for the tobacco industry, as they're now seen as the evil. And there are medics I know who won't go in the room with someone from the tobacco industry. So, as far as we're concerned, it's vitally important that the industry works with government and, if at all possible, continues to show leadership, not just to retailers and, you know, and to the producer industry, but the Portman Group works with government to come up with solutions.
Who are the other, better word, there's lobbyists really, who you meet in these government circles who may not necessarily have the same point of view to you? Maybe they do, maybe they don't.
Yeah, I mean, we will obviously be working very closely with the Industry Trade Association. So, you know, they'll be sector-specific, so they will be British Beer and Pub Association, Wine and Spirit Trade Association, Scotch Whisky Association, Gin and Vodka Association. But there's a difference between them and us. We obviously have the regulatory role. We will also have it within our remit to challenge our members, as the trade associations are very good at representing their members' views. You know, so it's we've got a different role, and we will actually the only reason really why we are successful is that our member companies accept the fact that we have license to challenge them.
What about some of the other, like the AHA, Alcohol Health Association?
Yeah, I mean, they will be also be involved, and we'll go to meetings with, you know, the likes of the British Medical Association, the Royal College of Physicians, Alcohol Concern. And I think, you know, it's fair to say we do have a lot of common ground with them. You know, there's a lot of understanding and, you know, partnership working. Where we tend to differ is on how we can actually change the culture, what will be effective, what will work, and what possibly won't work.
Okay. I think we'll wrap it up there, Michael. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Excellent. Cheers.